everybody. Welcome back. It's another episode of Simply Amazing. Tim Ryder from the Apple. Back as always, the incomparable Taryn Sharma. What's up, buddy? How's your week going so far?
Yeah, it's going well. Busy week all around. Tons of news, both in baseball and out of baseball. But it's just so nice. I think this weekend is the last weekend without Mets baseball for the foreseeable future. So I'm excited about that.
Yeah, we're hoping to see Halloween before Mets baseball ends.
That's right.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's, you know, players, I believe they reported just in over the last couple of days. We've seen some live BP and video getting shot by the beats, by the team. And it's exciting. I think everyone's kind of feeling that rush that, you know, baseball's finally back. It's of an extremely competitive team. You know, it's the furthest thing from irrelevant. And I can remember so many spring trainings as a Mets fan heading into spring where everyone's, you know, bouncing and just Mets fans aren't. But, you know, the tables have turned 180. And I guess we'll get into all of it. I know everyone's been talking about a Pete Alonso extension. Shout out to Eric from the Apple, who was right on top of this. He said the Mets should sign McNeil and Alonso to extensions. This is going back almost probably a month plus now, but Alonso's still out there. He's you know, kept mum's the word as far as extension talk. I'm sure the team's willing to speak with him. You have any thoughts? He sure did hit a power bomb today.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, I love Pete. I think Pete, in a lot of ways, is the soul of the club. And I think that the great thing about this team right now, the way that it's currently constructed, there are so many leaders in different areas. You look at Max, Francisco Lindor, obviously. Nimmo has really risen to that role. McNeil as well. But Pete, I think he's really been the fire, the passion for this team a lot in the same way that that Lindor has been. So obviously would love for him to stick around. He's a guy that's consistently shown improvement. He's become a better hitter, but more evidently, I think that it's kind of amazing how he's dedicated himself to being a good fielder. And I just think about that when he was at All-Star Week last year and working with Ron Washington. And that was just kind of a cool thing because, you know, Ron Washington obviously works for the Braves, but one of the best defensive coaches in all of baseball. And so soaking that up and taking advantage of the opportunity to gain that knowledge, I thought was awesome. And it really speaks to the type of guy that Pete is. Like you want somebody who is going to keep working hard and dedicating themselves to the team. And honestly, when Pete came up, I thought that there was a bit of a lull in terms of who was going to fill this power vacuum that and really like lead the team. And I think that he rose to that challenge in a huge market, and he's somebody that loves to be here. So I would love for him to spend his entire career with the Mets.
Oh, 100%. I think he's would be the ideal candidate to, you know, have his, maybe not the face of the franchise, but one of the faces of the franchise, you know, for the more than foreseeable future. You know, what strikes me about Pete, and I have no problem with him kind of brushing off any extension talk right now. I think, you know, of course, outside perspective, it looks like he has no want or intention of having this be a distraction, whether it gets done during spring training, whether it gets done through the season, whether it gets done down the road somewhere. I think it's, you know, obvious that both sides are interested in talking about it. And I'm sure there's been some conversations, but, you know, like you just said, Pete's been getting better progressively every year. He's, you know, finding, I guess he's pinpointing his deficiencies and he's bringing them up to par, and he's doing it on almost like a case-to-case basis too, which is extremely impressive, whether it's two out strikes, whether it's chasing a down and away pitch, whether it's his defense, whatever, he puts the effort in. I think derailing that would, you know, have ripple effects, or at least negative effects, and keeping the contract stuff in his agent's office is probably the best thing for everybody right now. Like, I think as Mets fans, I don't think we should be all too concerned with what's going to happen with the extension. I think it's, I don't want to say it's a shoo-in, but at least not after DeGrom this winter. But I do think that, you know, it's approaching that inevitable, those inevitable stages that, you know, both sides clearly want this. I'm sure Pete wants to go into the season and continue on his trajectory and maybe bump up his value a little more in case they do want to approach that. But, you know, it's not like the Mets are going to try and shortchange anybody either. So, yeah, I would at least, I'm very happy letting this play out and keep Pete focused on the field and keep the power coming from that department, and hope he gets some more from some other spots.
Yeah. And I wonder if, you know, so you were talking about, Eric was talking about the extensions. I was also, you know, discussing this, I think, with you a little while back, and we were exchanging some numbers. My number for McNeil was, that I had in my mind, was much higher than what he ended up getting. So I'm wondering if that also indicates anything in terms of guys who want to be here, who are homegrown, maybe taking even a little bit less, even though Steve Cohen has obviously shown that he's willing to spend.
Well, I wouldn't be surprised by that. I'm sure that, you know, individually each guy wants to get what they're due. And, you know, for a guy like Jeff McNeil, what did he come out to? 452? 4 years, 52? I don't have it in front of me, and I could just be throwing that number out, but
I think you're right on that.
Okay. So, you know, I think that's fair. I don't necessarily think the game, at least monetarily, values batting average as it should. But, you know, I think outside looking in, a lot of folks see Jeff McNeil as just a batting average guy or a slap hitter guy. He's not. He does so much more than that. And I think the Mets getting him for a number like they did, that's, you know, that's great. He's still at least currently on the right side of 30. He doesn't have a ton of wear and tear on him. He's versatile. He's, of course, everything he does with the bat, that's outstanding. Now, if that can trickle down into whether it's reinforcing the roster, whether it's maybe padding or having a little wiggle room if you know, if Pete's negotiations get a little hairy, whatever the case may be, you know, this organization is just, whether it's, you know, thinking long game or just thinking now, like, hey, you think we can get this done for this number? Cool. Sign right here. Like, however it went down, no matter what the number was anyway, it's all good things for the Mets right now, man. I wanted to talk a little bit about Darren Ruff, but we'll get into him in a second. While we're talking about money, we're going to jump into this now. And I guess we're talking about the vibes as well, but Max Scherzer talked with Andy Martino from SNY on Tuesday. Mm-hmm. Said that he hasn't even thought about his opt-out yet. Hasn't even crossed his mind. He said, when we get to that bridge, we'll cross it. I'm paraphrasing, of course. And, you know, he put that in there as almost like a safety clause in case this organization was not going in the direction that he wanted to go. I implore you guys, check out Andy's article. It's really, really good. Really cool insight from Max. You know, I guess, and everybody kind of thought this when Jake walked, like, you know, where are things going to go from here? And clearly the Mets had already shown that they were putting the right foot forward even before Jake left. But how they've responded since Jake left, and I think everybody kind of feels the same way, is that this organization's heading in the right direction. And, you know, if I'm Max, and I guess the same thing could almost be said in the same regard or in the same breath as Pete, keep things focused on the field. You do it right here, and everything else is going to happen right elsewhere. It's just, it's a beautiful time to be a Mets fan. It has to be a wonderful time to be a Mets player, a part of the Mets organization. Just incredible.
Yeah, and I thought that the comments were very interesting. Scherzer said that it was a big draw for him to be able to come to New York and pitch with DeGrom. And, I mean, obviously all the fans were thinking that too, but it was cool to hear that Scherzer was thinking that as well. And that he was aware that DeGrom had this opt-out looming and that he was also thinking along the lines of what is going to happen if the if DeGrom opts out and where the Mets going to pivot to. And he told Martino, I got my answer, which is awesome. Like the 2-year agreement for Verlander, I think it would be top of mind, but also reinforcing that with Quintana, with Senga, with bringing Ottavino back, extending Diaz.
And even though it didn't work out, making the push for Correa says a lot about this organization and where they're at and where their head's at.
Absolutely. And so I think that, yeah, it's great. He's Scherzer is focused on the season. That is just who he is. That's been him. He's been a professional as long as we've been aware of one of the world's greatest pitchers, Max Scherzer, like that level guy. And I think that it's no coincidence that the Verlander deal is for 2 years. I think that these guys are interested in chasing a championship together. They didn't get it done together in Detroit. They got awfully close. And so I think that they are on the same page. Scherzer, if he doesn't opt out, it would be 2 years. And Verlander signed for 2 years, obviously. So I think that the focus is very evident. And obviously, you know, like baseball is so funny, right? You need so many things to go right. You need to stay healthy because one small tweak can change everything for how a guy approaches going to the plate or pitching. And so knowing that they'll still need a good amount of luck and that they're going to have to battle two of the other best teams in baseball in the Phillies and Atlanta to win their division and get into the playoffs, I couldn't be more thrilled right now with what I'm hearing. And so that just makes me all the more excited to see it. And so that's I'm looking forward to most right now.
Oh, yeah. I mean, all the little pieces are coming together now. And we're going to get into what's been the driving force behind this organizational turnaround when we get into the second half. But, you know, what we're seeing in camp now, you see guys like who was it? Excuse me, I have it written down. David Lennon from Newsday. Brandon Nimmo said on Tuesday, you know, and he's never been the stolen base threat that I guess maybe prospectors had hoped for when he was younger. Even I think he had in 2018, I think he had like 15 attempts. And it's like, oh, he's coming. He's going to make an attempt. And it, you know, it really hasn't been part of Nimmo's game. And I think it's just another say, hey, you know, of the, even whether it's team or individual, you know, hey, this is what works for us. This is what you're going to focus on. And, you know, if you have opportunities to swipe a bag here or there, cool. But, you know, in Nimmo's case, and I think for everybody, everyone's got their strengths, their weaknesses, and what works and what doesn't, what have you. For Nimmo, and I think that he's probably fine with this, you know, would he like to maybe swipe 10 bags in the year? I'm sure. But for the way this team is built, it's not necessary, especially with the, I don't want to say issues that Nimmo's had with his legs, but he has had, you know, hiccups, whether it's a quad or a hammy or a calf. There's been some things here and there. And, you know, it, like you said before, whatever keeps you on the field, that's what we want. And, you know, if they're going to limit Nimmo's aggressiveness on the base paths with maybe that in mind, I'm fine with it.
Yeah, absolutely. And so do you want to take a break and then we'll talk about Cohen or...
Yeah, we do have to take a quick break. I want to ask you about Ruff really briefly. So he got an injection in his right wrist, which is not a great start to camp, but Buck says he'll be back. He should be ready to go shortly. I believe that was his very shortened quote there.
Yeah.
Daniel Vogelbach's looking very trim. The Mets do have another right-handed DH option or two in their on their 40-man, whether that be implanted in the roster already or maybe on a fringe, but you know, we'll discuss all that at some point during this spring training season. Are you foreseeing Ruff being here when it comes down to making those cuts at the end of March?
No, I'm not. I think that he'll probably end up being released and then maybe re-signed to a minors deal. But the comments today just, you know, I have felt bad about Ruff. It just still made me feel bad for him. Like last year, awful year for him after he got to New York. We've talked about it on here. He lost his father last year. And then now this, I've seen Darren Ruff be successful. Like he was a good player in San Francisco. He did the things that the Mets brought him here to do. He just hasn't done them here. And so like him, I think he said to Tim Healy that he hit a few foul ball homers that they started fair. They ended up foul, but no one cares because they probably ended up in strikeouts. Like, yeah, I of course. Why would anybody care? Like, yeah, okay. You were a little bit, ahead or behind on a few balls, but
yeah. I mean, how many casual fans are like, oh man, he made solid contact though.
No, especially in a pennant race, right? It's about production. And so, I feel bad for Darren Ruff. I hope that he's able to bounce back from this arthritis fairly quickly. I wonder if that was bothering him last year, or you know, how it affected his performance once he got to New York. But hopefully this is it cortisol?
One of the two. I'm not sure. It was just all I saw was an injection in his wrist.
I hope that clears it up. But I think that there are a lot of guys on this roster or who are knocking at the door that can fill the role that Ruff might fill. And so I think there's a ton of competition and I'm not sure if he's going to be in a position where he can, perform well enough to break camp with the team. I don't know. What do you think?
You know, I think it's going to be a very pivotal spring for him. I think that if he can be the Darren Ruff that they traded for, guy who has the ability to hit lefties, guy who has the ability to hit some power if he's good, I think he can have a spot on this roster. I think it's just going to be an uphill climb. But I also think the Mets have protected themselves really well in case he's not ready to step into that role. I think that, of course, Francisco Alvarez is always going to be there as an option in my head. I think he should get reps as a right-handed DH, but, you know, I'll bark up that tree up until they tell me it's absolutely not going to happen. But from what we're hearing, it's not going to happen. But from what Buck's saying, it's going to be, and this isn't just for Alvarez, it's for everybody, you know, you're going to have to earn it. This is what spring training is for. And I know it's probably some sort of a spring training cliche, but it's the truth, especially when you have such a stacked team like this where there are a half dozen guys on the bubble right now who, with a strong spring, could absolutely be on the opening day roster. And, you know, leading into our second half, this team has been built in a way that's it's almost eliminated as much risk as possible and just kept on adding good players to an already good team. But we do have to take a break, and you kind of already know where we're going with this. So hang tight. We'll be right back.
Hi, everybody. I'm Katie Segal.
And I'm Kurt Sutter.
And welcome to our new podcast called PI, People, Influences, and Experiences.
Yes, it's sort of the get to know you at a deeper level, the who, what, when, where, and why you are rather than what it is you do.
Absolutely. We're not going to talk too much about what people do. We just want to know about their families, where they come from, you know, what shapes their parenting if they have kids, what shapes their marriages if they're married. We just want to be really nosy. We want to get in there.
A deep dive into nature and nurture.
And we started it because there are a lot of people that we don't know that we are curious about.
Right. And I have no friends. So for me, it's, you know.
Trying to get them out of the house.
Listen to it on whatever you listen to podcasts on.
Yeah, podcast, homecast.
Your podcasting apparatus. Watch it on the YouTube.
He's aging himself.
And we're back. As we were saying, things have been almost, you know, on the brink of magical for this organization as of late.
Tim, sorry, sure. Can I say one more thing about Darren Ruff? Because during our break, I read a great article by Abby Mastracco in the New York Daily News. But apparently this is something that Ruff has been dealing with for a couple of seasons. He's played through it before. He said he has no concerns that he'll be back in a couple of days. So, I mean, maybe the odds are better than what I gave it credit for. So just leaving it there. I hope that he's able to bounce back quickly and show that he's still capable of doing what they brought him here to do.
Oh, it would absolutely, it would be, you know, it would be, I don't want to say it would be a home run because that's just way too punish. It would be a boon for the Mets if Darren Ruff can be any semblance of what Darren Ruff once was and what they traded for him to be. It would be huge. But the next 6 weeks are going to really say a lot about this roster, and boy, what a roster it is. I mean, we've talked about it. You know, this is going back probably 18 months now. Like, wow, they're really putting effort. And, you know, we've just seen this gain more steam and gain more momentum. And, you know, the motivation to actually fly a pennant at Citi Field in the next few years is real. You know, like you heard Steve Cohen say it when I think it was his press conference. Like, this is, our plan is 3 to 5 years. And it really does look like they're shooting for that, for the low end of that plan. Like they're doing all they can. And unfortunately they're making some enemies in the process. Fellow owners were always going to be upset about what Steve Cohen was possibly going to do. And I think that they were probably concerned about that, bringing him on, and he played it cool for a while. And now he's just acting like a professional sports franchise owner who's spending money that he doesn't really need, should be acting like, you know, I'm here to win a championship. Let's win a championship. Yep. Now owners are getting there, you know, getting all ruffled, and that's of course naturally going to happen. Commissioner Rob Manfred this week, as Major League Baseball, at least as the league has done it many times over the last, I don't know, 20, 30, 40 years, floated a salary cap and, I guess, reform among the financial landscape of baseball. Correct me if I'm wrong, Tarrant. Isn't this what they did during the CBA last year when they added a fourth tier tax, aptly nicknamed the Steve Cohen tax? Wasn't this them already saying, okay, well, this is the rules we're going to set? Are they going to change the rules again, or are they just going to go ahead and let these guys play by the rules that the league set?
Yeah, listen, I don't think that it's any secret that Major League Baseball owners and owners of professional sports franchises more generally want a salary cap, because when you have cost certainty, which is something that a salary cap provides, the value of your team, which is really where a lot of this value is, right? If you own a team, it's not like, oh, the Mets are worth $5 billion. I have $5 billion. All that value is tied up in the equity of the team. Well, the equity, your value of your equity in the team goes up so much when there is cost certainty, when a prospective buyer would know what exactly they have to spend in a year on year off basis to pay for the team. And so knowing that, yeah, I think that the owners would love to have a salary cap. I think the Cohen tax is a pretty good compromise for them.
It was a solid deterrent, right?
Yeah, I think
it was constructed as a solid deterrent. Steve Cohen just blew right past it.
Yeah, but they had to have known that, right? Like, the point of the tax is not to prevent anyone from going past it. It's supposed to make it hurt if they do.
Yeah.
And so if the Mets keep going over the fourth threshold, which they might, I mean, it seems pretty clear that they understand that they have to spend for pitching. There isn't pitching coming through the minors right now. There's no pitching that's anywhere really close to contributing to the big league club. So knowing that they're going to have to spend for pitching is a pretty expensive commodity. And so I think that the Mets and Cohen keep showing that they're willing to shell out for that. So understanding that, I think it's fairly clear that they're going to go over that number. Like they're going to spend $40 million on whoever the best pitcher is. If Ohtani does end up becoming available, barring something else happening, I think they're going to set a new record in terms of what they offer him. And so could the Dodgers, so could the Yankees, so could the Giants and several other clubs who have owners that are inclined to participate that way.
Yeah. Oh, and I want to say, yeah, it was Buster Olney at ESPN. He shared an anonymous rival MLB owner's quote saying, "Why don't we just say thank you for the tax money?" I'm of course paraphrasing. Thanks for the tax money, Steve. Like, and just, you know, go on. If you're an opposing team, continuing to advance your ball club. Like, I can't understand any other team, any other 20 of the 29 teams getting upset with one for trying to win a championship. I just can't wrap my head around it. As far as the cap, I think this has been in the pocket of Major League Baseball for a very long time. I mean, if you remember back to the 94 strike, they slid one in without telling the union, which is kind of blew things on its, at least blew the lid off. I believe it was January of 94. They just kind of slid it in, said, "Oh yeah, we're going to have a salary cap now." And I want to say every player in Major League Baseball filed for free agency at once, or something to that effect. I don't have my timeline ahead of me, in front of me, but you know, of course they want this. They want to. It's funny because it all comes down to profit. And of course these are, you know, not every professional sports owner is a fan like Steve Cohen is. They're just businessmen and white businessmen in most cases. And they, you know, they are in this to make money. And, you know, that's unfortunate from a fan's perspective, but I guess that's the landscape. But you have to look at Steve Cohen and what he's doing and whether he has some allies within that fraternity that are willing to say, "Oh yeah, you know what, maybe this is how it should be done." And I think he alluded to that. And you know, there are people who are saying, "Hey, you're playing by the rules," and that's great. And I guess you kind of hope that all boats, you know, rise with the tide and you see some real change happening. But Major League Baseball, it almost feels like they're trying to hinder it, and that just, it's slowing the game down. It's extinguishing the growth of the game,
I think you're spot on. And I think that connects to another story that's going on at the same time right now. And I think there's a pretty clear exchange that can be made here. So I'm sure that a lot of our listeners have at least been peripherally aware of the Diamond Sports is thinking about filing for bankruptcy. They probably will.
The regional sports networks.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Which is owned by Sinclair. So Bally Sports North here in Minnesota, or some other regional sports networks. I think there's like 19 of them. Those deals being broken would open up the system to allow for Major League Baseball to do something more akin to what the National Football League does, where they sell all of the television broadcast rights and then they divide that up 32 ways. Teams in major markets like the Yankees, like the Dodgers, conceivably like what the Mets could be in the future, because the SNY contract, I don't think, is as lucrative as it would be if that if those television rights went to market. They have not traditionally been interested in doing the model where everybody gets a piece of the national deal. And so if you look at what the complaints are about, And the complaints in this case is that the economic system is not fair because these owners, these teams in the major coastal markets have so much money that they can spend freely. And we in the small markets don't have that luxury. And so it shouldn't be allowed. Well, what if we switch the television model? The cable contracts have been a major source of revenue for these teams for a long time. So if the model is changed so that everyone is getting an equal share, and so it's up to people like Steve Cohen, people like the Guggenheim Group in LA, to spend their own money in addition to whatever the equal portion of a national TV deal would be, why wouldn't that work? Doesn't that seem to you to be like a pretty even exchange?
You know, as very much an admitted layman in this sense, absolutely. I think that it would raise up the, I guess, not only the revenue of smaller market teams, but I would assume probably reinvigorate those fan bases, get them excited about their teams again. You know, if these smaller ball clubs just put a little bit of effort, if things were to change, you know, it's not like they haven't changed. They're now getting what, $100 million a year with their TV deal. And some of these small market teams aren't even touching that, but you know, even to take what they're doing now with that $100 million a year, if they were to spend, let's say, half of that on their ball club, whether it be on the roster, whether it be advancing in the stadiums, whatever, reinvesting it back into the team, you know, that would plant seeds. That would, you know, plant seeds in a fan base and say, hey, look, there's actually a future ahead of us. You know, look at the Royals. The Royals are going to field a subpar team this year. Very bright future. No inclination to take things to the next level until things are absolutely ready. They don't want to spend money until they have to. That's what it sounds like to me. But, you know, if you have all of a sudden this lucrative league-wide vibe, everyone's got money to spend, it almost changes the landscape from a fan's perspective. You know, waiting for these owners to actually spend the money, I guess, you know, probably our faces will turn blue holding our breaths until that happens. But, you know, it would be a renaissance in the sport.
Yeah.
For everyone to be on board and for everyone to have a new lease on life, no matter your market, no matter your whatever. That's how you revolutionize the game.
Yeah, and also to allow people to watch, because the other thing that's coupled in with that is that blackouts would be gone.
Yeah, and now what do you think? You think it would be a streaming thing? You think it would be a channel, like a block of channels on cable service? You think it would be a YouTube TV thing like NFL's doing next year? Like, they do have options. They can go a multitude of ways with this.
Yeah, I mean, it depends, right? The NFL sells its TV rights to Fox, to CBS, to NBC, to ESPN, And Major League Baseball does that to an extent, but if they were to package certain primetime games that, you know, no offense to that traditional rivalry, but that aren't just Red Sox Yankees 11 times a year, I think that does a great deal. I think also a lot of teams are starting to do this, moving start times up to 6:40 or even a little bit earlier. That's going to make it tough for people to maybe get in by first pitch, but I think that means that more people will stay until the end of games, more people will be able to watch until the end of games on television. And it's not necessarily even like getting people to turn it on. It's getting them to be able to stay on for the most important parts of the game. Because if you are trying to sell your game to somebody, it should be like the highest stakes. You know what I mean? Like it should be like a 12th inning with, you know, the visiting team up one and two runners on for the home team, two outs, like with their best hitter coming up. Those are the moments that we should want people, particularly children, to be able to stay up and see. Yeah. So, I'm hopeful that this TV, the failure on the part of the regional sports networks is going to open up the doors for Major League Baseball to do something like that, because I agree with you. I think it could be a renaissance for baseball.
It certainly has the potential to, but we'll see. I got this irking feeling they're going to shoot themselves in the foot once again, but we'll see. Imagine though, if Steve Cohen really could, you know, even if it's turning one owner by one owner and saying, guys, this is the way. Follow me. This is the way. And you actually get, like, you know, what if the Cubs were to go out and start spending? What if that's never going to happen with the current ownership group, but I was going to say the Reds, you know, but like, how about the Rays? The Rays are such an advanced organization with such a poor excuse of fielding, of investing in their ball club. You know, if they had just 30% higher of a payroll, that could be a major league, a World Series contender every year. You know, and just imagine, like, the Pirates with one of the brightest futures in baseball right now. You give them 5 years and money to spend, and that could be a World Series contender if the organization wants to try hard enough. And if you're baseball, you want to get to a point that all 30 teams, or shit, all 32 teams, if you want to take it there, yep, are going to get to the point that everybody wants to win that championship. Everybody wants to get their stadiums packed 81 times a night with their home fans. Everybody wants eyes glued to the TV through August. If your team is good, through September, like, everybody wants it. That's the dream. For me, at least from a fan, very novice perspective, the opportunity is there. The opportunity's been there. How they haven't jumped at it before, and how they're not on freaking trampolines now jumping for it, it is, you know, beyond the pale. But Major League Baseball.
Yeah. So a couple things. Pittsburgh, which is not just a good baseball city, but a great baseball city, really deserves that from their ownership. And second of all, you would think that some of these owners would just be like tired of people not liking them, right? Like, I don't know how anyone could look at, you know, Cohen is so loved by the fan base. And it's because, you know, and he said this during his taking questions the other day at spring training, they're not even doing that much. But any sort of opportunity that they take to engage with the fans, and it's a very passionate fan base, obviously, as we're part of it, that is so important to the fans. And so just looking around, like, you would think that the other owners would take note of what Steve and Alex Cohen are doing and how it has completely turned around this franchise. Just you know, the on-field stuff has been good also, 100 wins. They've got better players than they did before, but just the feeling, the vibes around this organization have gone from LOL Mets, like what an embarrassment, the Wilpons just doing all sorts of horridness, to somebody that is a fan and is willing to put their money where their mouth is and really just advocates for people like you and I, even though, you know, he couldn't be further removed from what we are. And so to me, that means a lot. And I hope that other owners will be like that, right? Like,
yeah.
Even John Henry, right? Like, Fenway Sports Group has had probably as much success as an ownership group could possibly have in owning the Red Sox, and the fans can't stand them.
Yeah, well, they had to give him freaking purple nurples just to sign their freaking. You know, I don't want to say he's going to be a Hall of Famer, but I think Rafael Devers is one of the best players in baseball. Yeah. You know, they had to pull him down the hallway by his ear just to get him to offer him a contract. Like, it's beyond me. He's more concerned with his other ventures, I'm sure.
Yeah, but I mean, not even, because like I follow Liverpool, and they've had almost no investment either recently. And so the Liverpool fans hate FSG as well. So it's he's kind of cornered on that, but yeah, I'm with you. We would go blue in the face holding our breath to see some change, but I'm hopeful, and I'm glad that the one guy who is interested in doing this is our owner.
Yeah. This is, again, it's a peak in, of course, it's a peak in Mets baseball, but it could be a peak in a greater sense, at least throughout the sport, if everybody kind of plays ball. But I was really taken by one of Steve Cohen's quotes. I know he spoke to the media, I believe, on Monday. I have a little snippet here. It's and I quote, "I made a commitment to the fans. It wasn't a short-term commitment. When I do something, I don't do it halfway. When I'm in, I'm all in. I don't accept mediocrity well, and so I have a certain high expectation. If it requires me to invest in this club, I'm going to do it." You know, you could show that to any fan of any sports team in any country in the world, and they say, "Yeah, I want that guy as my owner." And yeah, it's a good time to be a Mets fan.
Absolutely,
Taryn. This was fun. I for one, I love when you fill me in on like the business aspect of sports, because, you know, I look at the diamond, bro. I look at the what's going on in the field, bro. Like, you're able to fill me in when I have absolutely no clue what I'm talking about.
Yeah, I think you obviously know a lot about everything in the game, but I'm glad that I can play a part in that. And it, for me, everything that happens off the field makes the stuff on the field that much more interesting. It adds different layers to the narrative of what's going on. So I'm obviously always happy to talk with you, and I'm glad that we have an outlet to be able to do this.
You're gosh darn right, my friend. And I guess on that note, we are we're back next week, ever so closer to Mets opening day. And I don't know, maybe we'll grab a guest or something. We'll figure it out.
Yeah. Maybe if something interesting happens with Phil Regan's lawsuit, we'll talk about that.
No, the Vulture. I can't believe they pushed him out. As it appears they did. I'm sure we'll have some updates on that before the next time we hit record.
That's right.
All right, everybody. We'll see you guys next time. Enjoy these special times in the Mets universe. And you know the sign-off. Let's fucking go, Mets. We'll see you guys next time. Peace.